looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mez. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Neiman Bank, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Jordan's Furniture, City of Boston Credit Union, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, Sense.com, Acura of Auburn, and Quay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun. Presented by Budweiser, Boston, this buzz for you.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
From day one, what was the mess you were going to bring?
I kept telling them how talented they were, that for whatever people thought about them last year against the Houston Astros, we were not afraid, but we knew it was a better series than what people thought. They were, what, four outs away from pushing to game five? So I kept telling them, you guys are good. You guys are talented. From the other side, this is what people think about you guys.
So here you go, Red Sox fans. Has the euphoria worn off yet? I hope not. I hope it hasn't. You should celebrate this team. It's a team worth celebrating. And as a result, the Baseball Reporters is going to continue through the balance of the week. We will go right through Friday here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. We'll take your calls tonight only until 6:30 before we turn it over to Bruins pregame. But then the rest of the week we'll be here until 7 o'clock. We can open up the phone lines right away, 617-779-0985. We did not have a program last night because of Patriots pregame, taking it right into that Pats game against the Buffalo Bills. Obviously, New England won the game. What was the final, 25-6 last night? Boy, was that a crappy game to watch. Holy crap. But that aside, but as I said, the Baseball Reporters will be with you through the end of the week, and there is a lot to talk about with the Red Sox. Again, we're sort of going to go over the victory here with the Dodgers a little bit tonight, and I want to get your sentiments, especially from those of you who thought I was being too hard on the team all year long. And then in the second segment, we'll continue to take phone calls, and I also want to play something that Alex Cora said on the postgame show on the MLB Network. You just heard a little bit of that interview there with Mark DeRosa, and there were other members on that panel as well as Pedro Martinez, and I thought that Cora had an interesting exchange with Pedro during that program following the game on Sunday night. Again, in the interim, 617-779-0985. Baseball Reporters Postseason Edition is presented by Budweiser. Boston, this bud's for you. Also, thanks to our friends at MGM Springfield, and I should also add that tomorrow during the parade, the Red Sox celebratory parade, which will take place in the Back Bay area. They're starting on Boylston Street tomorrow, are they not?
Well, they're starting at Fenway.
They're starting at Fenway and then going down Boylston Street.
Correct.
Okay, so there you go. But in any case, I should point out that Rich certainly from the Touch on Rich show will be at the Globe Bar on Boylston Street tomorrow from 11 to 1, sponsored by Budweiser. So Rich is going to go over there after the morning show. If you want to say hello to him, it should be a fun day in the city tomorrow. I'm not a parade guy, as most of you know. Okay, I didn't go to the parade when they won in 04. By the end of that thing, I was like, no thanks, I'm catching my sleep. But for the fans, it's a fun day. Okay, it's a fun day. And this team is worthy of you showing up and your appreciation. Because boy, did they nail it this year. 108 wins during the regular season. They went 11-3 in the playoffs. 119 wins in all. And if you wanted to throw the regular spring training on there, rather, because remember, they had the best record in baseball in spring training. 141 wins in all. 141 victories by the Red Sox. And so if you want to talk about where this team is in Red Sox history, we can do that. But the reason we played that Cora sound for you at the beginning of the show is because I think that this was really the message that Cora delivered all year long. And it's the message that really the Red Sox needed to hear. And that was Alex Cora saying to the players, you're better than you think you are. This was like the message over and over again. You're better than you think. You're a good team. And this team, as crazy as it sounds, in 2016 and 17, the Red Sox had a little bit of a confidence problem. And they certainly had one in 2017 after Ortiz left. And they needed somebody to come in and tell them that they were capable of playing with the biggest and best teams in baseball. And Cora was that guy. I told you, Chris Sale made a comment, I thought, during, I think it was after the LCS, when he said that our confidence comes from him. That's the way he put it. Our confidence comes from him. And I never imagined that a manager could have the kind of impact on a team that Alex Cora did on this club this year. I still don't think he was the biggest change. I think JD Martinez was a bigger one. But boy, what a profound impact Cora had on the Red Sox. So as I said, it's a short show tonight. We'll take as many calls as possible. We'll kick it off tonight with Ron, who's in his car and wants to talk about the impact that managers can have. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, thanks for the call. First time, long time.
Fire away. What do you got?
Just want to say, you know, I think it's every team needs that reinforcement with what Alex Cora said. Everybody coming up nowadays, everybody needs to be told that they're special. I mean, at the end of the day, if you can keep all your players happy and confident, that's what's going to win. Because with all the metrics out there that every manager is using, it's a 50-50 coin flip. And I think Alex Cora made those 50-50 calls. He called heads 90% of the time. It was heads. I think we'd have the same conversation if the Dodgers manager did the same exact thing.
So Ron, look, to me, that there's no doubt the biggest part of managing is the clubhouse part of the job. It is. And the psychology of it is big, too. And so whether you believe it, look, Cora got lucky in a lot of his calls. He made some bad decisions there at the end of game 3 and in the early part of game 4. He made some bad decisions there. There was about a 12-hour span there, maybe a little bit more. Maybe it was 24 hours, really. Pretty close to it. There was about a 24-hour stretch, maybe, whatever, where Cora looked like he was trying to help the Dodgers get to a 2-2 series. Okay, but that aside, the most important thing this year is that these guys started to believe. So just go right through it. Has David Price ever pitched better in the postseason than he did for Alex Cora? Has Mookie Betts ever had a better year in the regular season than he did for Alex Cora? How about Xander Bogaerts? Has he ever played better than he did under Alex Cora? Jackie Bradley? Did Jackie Bradley have his best year under Alex Cora? Because I think he did, at least in the second half. So you can go right down the line, and then you can point to a lot of guys who had what you would describe as career years under a manager who knew how to get it out of them. My buddy Cam here in Taunton. What do you got, Cam?
Tony, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, I said to you yesterday in 2-6 that Dombrowski deserves a lot of credit, and he does. I mean, the biggest move he made was signing JD Martinez. To add a triple crown lineup to your lineup was huge. But Cora, I mean, that team, they will die for that man. It feels that he has that team so well. It's unbelievable. What got me more than anything was his speech after the Yankee series, and when he said, "Let's go," the roar they let out. I mean, he has that locker room so well. I mean, that was as we were all calling for Garden hire or him bringing Leland out of retirement when they fired Farrell. But that was just a perfect hire for the team because they nailed that call.
Yeah, Cam, again, I think that it became pretty evident as they went on how much they believed in the guy. And just look at what they were willing to do down the stretch to win the thing. You had guys coming out of the bullpen with no rest. David Price, who should have been the series MVP. David Price should have been the World Series MVP. David Price came in relief, started game 2, then flew with the team to California, and I'm willing to bet that day he played catch. Price strikes me as one of these guys who throws every single day and has a rubber arm, despite the elbow injury. But that aside, started game 2 and won it. Went out to the West Coast, and then warmed up in the bullpen in game 3 and entered. In game 4, he warmed up again to back up Craig Kimbrell, and then in game 5, he started on short rest. Nathan Eovaldi had the longest relief appearance by pitches thrown, in 40 years in the World Series. 40 years. Maybe longer because they didn't always keep pitch counts. And he did it because his manager asked him to and he said he would do it. Chris Sale came out of the bullpen. They just, all of them, they nutted up. They kept taking the ball. They sacrificed and they won and they were happy to do it for the manager. Boy, tell me that is an enormous departure from what happened with the Red Sox the last year. Because it certainly felt like they weren't at all on the same page with their manager. Mike is in a car. Mike, what do you got?
Yeah, hey, guys, look, I called in multiple times, especially the second half of the year, bashing the bullpen and saying that, you know, again, just like Murray, they were the wheel of gutless bums. You could never get to Kimbrell. It turned out Kimbrell was one of the shakiest guys coming out of the bullpen. But I think the tone was set by the starters getting out there and pitching the eighth inning. They knew that was a gap. And after, I feel like, game one, seeing the starters go out there and take the eighth inning, you saw the rest of those guys start stepping up. And Joe Kelly was as lights out as I've ever seen him. This is a guy, I didn't even want him on the postseason roster. So I'm happy to call and eat some crow, and I am still feeling euphoric. I thought it was an amazing series.
Yeah, so, Mike, look, we're all eating crow on that one. Anyone who predicted that sort of performance from the bullpen was either, you know, had a crystal ball and could see into the future, or was just lucky. So, you know, to me, I did not see that coming, particularly from Kelly and the other guys. I thought there was a chance they were going to use starters in the eighth. I did not expect Porcello in game one. Evaldi, I thought, could get in there. I did not expect Sale in game four. And the other thing is that, in retrospect, look at it. That was the plan from the very beginning. Remember in game one, we said it was a fire drill. They had to bring in Porcello in the eighth. Remember that?
Yeah.
Against the Yankees? It wasn't a fire drill. It was their blueprint from the beginning. They took the eighth inning away from the relievers because they knew it was a problem, and they gave it to their starters, many of whom had bigger balls than their relievers. So in the process, you know what they did? They kept their relievers in a comfort zone. Okay, so the only thing I'm going to ask on the calls tonight, and we ran into this yesterday on Felger and Maz, make your message quick because a lot of you want to get on, and it's understandable why. Quickly, Joe and Walpole. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, Maz. Great job this year. I just wanted to cover a stat I came across Sunday morning that indicated that the Dodgers were 52-0 or 54-0 this season with a 4-run lead until Saturday night, which I think is phenomenal. Maybe that's too strong a word, but showed a gritty nature behind the Red Sox roster, their lineup, and that's something I think we need to keep intact going forward.
Yeah, so Joe, they actually showed that stat during the broadcast on Saturday night when the Red Sox were down 4-0 in the seventh. And make no mistake, that's when the series flipped again. Right, you sort of gave away the game on Friday night. And I say sort of, because the Dodgers gave it to you first when I don't know what the hell Kiki Hernandez was doing covering first on that play, but he didn't catch the ball and it went into right field and the Red Sox scored. Okay, so, but nonetheless, you had it. You had it and you gave it back. And then Cora left Eduardo Rodriguez in the game too long in game four and he admitted it. We all knew it at the time, and to his credit, Cora admitted it after the game. So it could have been 2-2. It was that close. The Dodgers were 54-0 this year when leading by 4 runs at any time in a game, and they were the only team in baseball that didn't blow a lead like that until game 4 of the World Series, and then they gagged it. 617-779-0984. You know, the caller mentioned the bullpen. Jim Murray's Wheel of Gutless Bums, which we played for you all year long. We have a new version. And it doesn't exactly make fun of the relievers. It makes fun of some other people. We'll play that for you when we come back. And I told you, it's a little anecdote from the interview Alex Cora did immediately after Game 5 that I think is worth sharing. We'll touch on that, too.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Maserata, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Mike Felger,
the loser.
Tony Mann.
Fucking puppet.
Jim Murray.
He got the sunglasses.
And those other dopes.
It's time to spin the wheel of doubting jerks.
All season long, the world champion Red Sox were mercilessly mocked by local media members. And now, Red Sox fans get to spin the wheel to decide who gets punched.
Man, Jim Murray.
And today's doubting jerk is
all of you, you f***ing losers.
Oh, there you go. Little payback for the Red Sox. Well earned, too, by the way. With all the predictions of forecasting of demise that we had for their bullpen. As it turned out, their bullpen was pretty good. In fact, they were really good. And granted, it was the starters that got in there at least part of the time. But nonetheless, they were good. I'll tell you what, I've teased this comment that Alex Cora had, a little anecdote that concerns the pitching coach and how it came to be and all of that. We'll do that later in the week because we're short on time tonight, and I do want to get to your phone calls. So Trey is in a car and wants to talk about something that we haven't gotten a lot of attention on the last couple of days, but it's worthy of mentioning. Go ahead, Trey.
Hey, guys. Love the show. I'm reaching out because during this season, like question in the lineup, you know, who comes for the big game.
Yeah, Trey, I got to let you go because your connection sucks. But your comment line said Rafael Devers is clutch. And again, you're talking about a 21-year-old kid here. Okay, in 15 career postseason games in the last 2 years, he's hitting .311 with an .884 OPS. Now, look, he did not have a great World Series statistically, 3-for-14 with a .481 OPS, hit only .214, but he had a huge home run against Verlander in the League Championship Series, and he had a big pinch hit to give you a 5-4 lead in the game on Saturday that evened up that gave the Red Sox a 3-1 series lead and prevented the Dodgers from tying it 2-2. Okay, so let's continue with your calls because, again, I want to get as many as we can in here before we go to Bruins pregame. Tim is in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Tim.
Tony, I love this year's team, but me, I want Price to opt out. I hope they don't re-sign Kimbrel. That's going to be too much money. I hope they can keep Kelly and Eovaldi because I feel like power arms are what's hot in baseball right now. But my question for you is, with all these contracts coming up and they're going to be needing some cost control players, does Michael Chavis have a shot at playing first next year and keeping Moreland or Pierce as the mentor role like Cora did for Pedroia? Just because I know he had a good second half after his suspension, and they're just going to need some cost control everyday players.
Yeah, so Tim, look, maybe that's something they're considering, and whether it's Chavis or Sam Travis. I think now, I don't know what Chavis would be like defensively at first base, but both of those guys are right-handed batters. And if you're talking about letting Pierce go, then it would be one of those guys. So my answer would be yes.
I feel like I've kind of given up on Sam Travis, honestly. It's been that way for like 2 years. I feel like, oh, Sam Travis, he's going to be the first baseman going into this new season. Nope, just hasn't happened.
Yeah, and look, so Moreland will be back. We'll see what they do with Pierce. They're not going to be able to keep everybody. And I'll tell you, we'll get more into the off-season stuff here in the next few days. In fact, maybe we'll break it down and we'll do infield one day, outfield the next day, pitching staff, whatever. I don't know. I haven't figured that out yet. But we'll do a lot of off-season stuff the next couple of days. Steve is in Lynn. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, Tony, I think one unsung hero in this World Series is you. I mean,
yeah,
let's
not go that far, Steve, but go ahead.
No, my take is that you and the Fellowship of the Miserables in the media, you know, picking nits all year long from base running to Hap versus Eovaldi versus all of the negative, I think that made this team much more resilient and much more inwardly focused and a stronger team, and ultimately that helped them persevere.
So, Steve, you know, the negativity is a good thing.
In a perverse way, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so look, I would love to say, yeah, I'll take some credit for that, except that Murray will tell you, and so will Jimmy Stewart, I'm negative every year. Like, and they don't win every year. So the reality is, it just comes down to the players on the team. Okay, these guys took it as a challenge, and I mean this.
They definitely had a chip on their shoulder.
They were on a mission all year long. They were tired of losing in 2016 and 2017. They were tired of it. When I say losing in October. So we kept saying over and over again, they're a good team. We need to find out if they can be great. Okay, this year we found out what they're really capable of. What do you got, Jimmy? Oh. And so the 93 wins, as great as it was the last couple of years, or as good as it was, they underachieved. And they knew that they were capable. Cora's whole message was built on that. Okay, again, in retrospect, that's what his whole sort of campaign was, or his platform was to them. You're better than you think you are.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Mazz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.